Well, I don't know about you, but this weekend I will be spending a little bit of time in the outdoors in my lawn and garden area, doing a little cleanup and sort of getting things ready for the winter season. And there are quite a few things we can do out there. And I know Melinda Myers is going to have some tips for me and probably for you as well. She is our Milwaukee-based garden expert, garden guru, the author of more than 20 books. She also is the host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we love it when she joins us. Melinda, always a pleasure.
Hey, it's always great to chat with you and your listeners, Larry, especially on such a cold, windy fall day.
Yeah, boy, is it ever. And I'm looking around at my flower beds and the straw bales. And there's a little bit of work for me to do out there. And how are you doing? Are you?
I keep thinking, oh, it's another warm day. I'll get further ahead. But I have a pretty long list too. I'm looking at the wind, and luckily all my leaves are in the woods, so I actually gather leaves from my garden. But when I lived in the city, a day like today meant all my neighbors' leaves blew off their yard and ended up in mine. So even if you got a first go round on your leaves, you probably have more in your yard to clean up. I still have pots, things. It's been so mild that I left a lot of my containers out that had cold tolerant annuals like alyssum and some of those to enjoy. But I think I'm getting ready like you. I think this weekend is the one I'm just going to say, okay, they're going in the compost bin. The pots are getting stored. It's time to clean up and start looking at. I have a few plants to either heal in, or I'm still going to try to get a few things planted, including bulbs. So I think my list is like yours, longer than the time we have to do it all.
Well, Pete in Milwaukee has a question. I think that goes along with what we've been talking about. Pete,
okay.
Hi.
Hi. I recently took down my garden and cleaned it, but I had several tomatoes, maybe 100 or so, that I just didn't want to eat. They were damaged. Can I bury them in the garden for next year?
You know, if they weren't diseased, burying them deep so that the seeds don't sprout is an option. You may want to start a compost pile, or if you have space to bury diseased plant material away from the garden. A lot of our leaf spot and fungal diseases will carry over. I know you're not asking about squash, but if you've had squash vine borer, they often overwinter in the vine, so you want to get those out. Now, some municipalities let you throw away small quantities of diseased materials and weeds, so you might want to check with your municipality. I know when I was gardening in the city, it was always a challenge. What do I do with the things that I don't want to compost because compost piles aren't hot enough, and I didn't have room to bury because every square inch was planted. So if you have an area away from the plants that you're going to grow next year, so if it's tomatoes, you want to keep them away from where you're going to plant tomatoes if at all possible.
All right, I had three straw bales that are disintegrating. Can I take them since I put a lot of, I put the fertilizer in there? Can I take the straw bales and throw them into my raised garden?
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
That, and Larry probably does that every year. I did straw bale gardening successfully this year. I've had to admit my failures in the past. And so the outer part that wasn't decomposed, I used for some areas I seeded. I used that for mulch. And then, like it sounds like you do, Larry, I use the rest. I'm incorporating it into my garden areas or into the compost pile as well.
Yeah, I just piled all mine up from last year, or last year I did that, and then I just threw seed potatoes in threw them in the pile, and I've got lots of potatoes this year from that pile that was sort of off to, you know, next to the new straw bales. So
that's a great idea. So really giving it a second go round before it goes in the compost pile. That's
idea. Yeah, and I'm going to do the same thing this year, and it's pretty disintegrated, but there's still enough left that I'll be able to raise a bunch of potatoes.
Well, excellent. And there's nothing better than homegrown potatoes.
Oh, no.
Absolutely. The pride when you uncover it and there's something actually under the ground.
So there you go, Pete.
Pete, good luck with your cleanup project.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joan in Baraboo has a question. Hi, Joan. Wait a second here.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem that is driving me nuts. I have a lot of hosta plants, and I have some that I healed into my garden in spring because I wasn't well enough to plant them where I wanted them in their permanent place. Went out there the day before yesterday and thought, well, I'll get these weeded out now so I can see how they're doing and make sure the labels are still intact. I probably had 25 plants that were out there, and of that I have found four that still possibly will grow. I have mounds of meadow voles, I presume, or meadow mice making their nice little nests right on top of a, and they eat all the way down. There's a depression where they've eaten down into the hosta plants. My cat is 16 years old and doesn't get out to the garden anymore. What can I do to protect the ones that I have planted this year?
You know, that is very frustrating. There've been I love to leave perennial, and I'm going to get this will wind back to your question, Joan. So hang in there with me. I love to leave perennial stand for the winter, but voles can be an issue on daylily, Siberian iris, and hostas, as you found out. So a couple of options: voles, if you know they're out of there, you could surround that area where they're healed in with a bit of hardware cloth fencing and sink it down about 4 to 6 inches now so that when the ground freezes, they can't get through. You can set traps using a rat trap baited with peanut butter and oats. Put them in under something so that birds don't accidentally start munching on the oats and then get snapped by the trap. You could have as many as, I think it's 400 to 1,000 meadow mice or vole per acre. obviously, they're not all in your hostas, but it probably feels that way right now. So trapping is an option as long as you know, in a PVC pipe or undercover, they're more likely to go in there anyway, and you won't get damage any birds. Or you could try the fencing and then just monitor to make sure they're out of the area so you're not fencing them inside, but keeping them out of that area where they're healed in.
There you go. Good
well,
luck.
I think because I'm surrounded by woods.
Right.
I think I'm never going to be rid of these things. They're always going to be.
Yeah.
I think so too. And so part of it is trying to pick and choose. You know, I'm out in the country and have some tall grassy areas and a lot of woods, and I think the voles are munching on other things. But I've put some fencing in around certain gardens so that, you know, I know that I have a better shot at them being there, and then always making sure that if you're fencing areas that there's no weak points, like where gates attach or, you know, any place like that. So you're right. It's a constant challenge. I don't want to call it a battle, a challenge. So good luck. It sounds like, though, you've got a small number of plants, and once they start eating, it's hard to keep them away. So fencing, I think, would be a good route for you this year for sure.
All right. Good luck, Joan. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jeff in Greendale has a question, so let's go to Jeff. Hi.
Hi. I frequently leave up my salvia and my sage and my anise hyssop in the flower gardens over the winter because it looks nice. At least it's something up in the winter months. And I've done the same thing in my flower garden a couple of years. Are there any advantages to clearing that out now as opposed to clearing it out in the spring?
The only thing you want to be concerned about is anything that was diseased or insect infested. That you want to get out of the garden. But by leaving things stand for winter, you're right, you get the winter interest. And a lot of times that helps bring the birds in that eat the seeds. So that's extra winter interest. Especially for perennials, you get that hardiness factor. For some of the self-seeding annuals, you'll have some seeds falling down, so you'll get some free plants, so to speak.
That's why my brother planted sorghum. It looks nice, and it's the seeds for the birds. And he likes the fact that there's shelter for some of the animals in the flower in the vegetable garden. So,
oh, exactly. So I'm with you on that. The only cleanup I'm doing in my garden is, you know, I had a lot of blight on my tomatoes, like most people, and some squash vine borer that's getting out.
I might take out then the black cherry tomatoes. I got some, but they weren't as hardy this year, so I might pull those out just to be safe.
And then all the seedlings that you'll get, too.
Yeah.
So that's
a lot of those.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, we have open lines now. You can join in with the conversation here as we visit with Mel Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She has more than 20 books, including Minnesota and Wisconsin month-by-month Gardening, hosts Melinda's Garden Moments. Always great to have her along. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And you've got that DVD set, Melinda, that I thought is pretty cool, How to Grow Anything.
You bet. If you know great courses, they're known for doing online, some DVDs, CDs, and subjects typically like philosophy, science, physics. But they decided to reach out and do a little more, including horticulture, and invited me to do a few classes. So last year, it was very exciting. Well, it was a little stressful because remember spring last year and the winter last year. But we shot a lot of the footage in my landscape and area landscapes for How to Grow Anything Edibles, which was very fun because we could track vegetables start to finish. We showed lasagna gardening, raised bed gardening, thinning, harvesting, and a variety of techniques you could use to maximize productivity, and very practical advice, because I think that's what gardening should be: fun, successful, and trying new things. We also did trees and shrubs, how to make them thrive, so we covered planting, transplanting, and pruning. And then the first two were on containers. So we did containers in a small and a large garden, using them for landscaping, using for edible purposes, how to overwinter, and then landscaping in 6 lessons, which we all know as gardeners is a lot more, but covering the basics so that a little bit on soils, a little bit on selecting plants, things to help you kind of get started. Even if you're experienced, I've had a lot of gardeners say, oh, I learned some things. I've been gardening a long time, but I learned some things from those, some ideas I could use in my yard. So just some fun things and some educational things and a little bit of science and a little bit of art and a lot of practical advice to help you along the way.
And how do we get those copies? I think we have a link on our Facebook page. But
excellent. If you go to either my website, we'll link you right through to Great Courses, or if you go to the Great Courses website, just Google Great Courses, How to Grow Anything, that'll get you to the page as well.
And what a fun thing to have as winter draws near, or into the winter, as a matter of fact. It'd be kind of a fun thing to be watching in January and February.
You bet. I think that's what I think as northern gardeners, catalogs and shows about gardening are what get us through sometimes those long, cold days of winter.
Oh, man. Well, let's go to Becky. Has a question from Rayo, I believe. Hi, Becky.
Hi, from Rayo.
Rayo.
And, yep, and I have just been spending some time outside this morning trying to clean up my Siberian irises, and I am stumped with these plants. I had one plant in a perennial bed about 3 years ago. It had gotten so big it had a donut hole in the middle, so I dug the whole thing out, made about 6 different clumps of it along the driveway, and it's turned out to be way too big a plant for that location, and they haven't bloomed well there. 3 of the 6 have bloomed. So I want to dig them out. I think I'm going to wait until spring to do that, but I can't even cut the tops off right now. They're huge and they're tough. I've tried hedge shears, a hedge trimmer.
Oh my goodness.
Trimmer. Like, I'm ready to give up. Any other suggestions, or should I be trimming them this time of year?
I would leave them, I would leave them stand for winter as long as they're good and healthy. Again, good insulation. If you are worried about voles, if you've had problems with voles in the past, being by the driveway might discourage them. The voles.
I don't usually have rodents there.
Mm-mm. Okay, that's great. Have you tried hand pruners, a reciprocating saw? Those might be.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll bring out the big guns here. You obviously have some plants. I usually leave mine stand if they're healthy, just because of the added winter interest, and then do my pruning in the spring, but it, being by the driveway and with snow removal, if you feel that cleaning them up was going to help that process.
Well, in the past, mine did stay upright, but this year they have all flopped from the center, so I just have these big mounds of flopped leaves, so they really don't look very attractive. That's why I thought I'd cut them off. What's making them flop like that?
What kind of sunlight do you get in that area?
I would say about half the day in full sun, and then it goes to shade.
Okay, because usually they're fairly shade tolerant, but if you push them into too much shade, they do tend to get floppy. Are you doing any fertilizing?
No, no fertilizer
at
all.
That's good. Too much nitrogen fertilizer.
Right.
Can get less succulent growth. Sounds like they're putting on lots of good growth, but that can make them floppy as well. Your soils, what are your soils like in the area?
Oh, it's a sandy loam.
Okay.
Fairly rich, because this is closer to my shade garden that I've enriched with mulch over the years. I use mulch for, or compost for the mulching.
Okay. Usually if it's a heavy clay soil, which is really nutrient-rich, even more so than a loamy soil, that can also, you know, you want to really be careful not to add any more, which you're not, but that can also cause some floppiness. I would try moving them into a little more sunlight. It just may be they're right on that edge. It sounds like they're getting enough to grow, but maybe just need a little bit more to stand upright and tall. I once heard a fellow horticulturist say that, you know, it usually takes them 3 tries to find the best spot for their perennials. Sometimes it involves some death along the way. So you might be in for that 3rd spot that's the key to success with this plant.
There you go, Becky. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, our guest today, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, as we talk with her about winterizing the landscape now for added beauty next season. We had a whole lot to talk about with her, and hope you'll join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be hearing from one of our wonderful UW Extension horticulture educators, Diana Alfeth. She's going to talk about, frozen soil, caring for it, and she's going to reflect on the growing season in 2015. Right now, visiting with Melinda Myers about winterizing your landscape and, well, other questions as well. We're getting a pretty broad range of things, which is always wonderful. And I think we'll go right back to the phones, Melinda, because lots of people online. Sue and Mequon. Yeah, Sue and Mequon next. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've mulched and bagged leaves, and I want to spread them over my flower beds. But we've been warned not to provide a nice home for mice and voles. How cold does it have to be before I spread these leaves?
And I'm assuming you've shredded the leaves, so they're smaller pieces, right? And, and I know you know this, Sue, but I'm just going to mention, when leaves are large and not shredded, what happens is they tend to mat down and ice up and end up being an issue. They're not good insulators. And I'm assuming you're going to go around your perennial plants, not covering them, because, again, they're not the best, leaves aren't the best winter mulch. When we do winter mulch, we typically use straw and evergreen boughs, and we wait till the ground freezes. If voles have been a problem, you may want to do the same. You may want to wait until the ground gets nice and crunchy so that they've gone somewhere else. I mean, they're active in the winter, but at least they're not going to be nesting under those leaves and be less of an issue. When I was in the city, voles were a lot less of a problem, and so I would just shred my leaves and put them right in the garden right away. But I didn't really have a vole problem. So that would be the only thing, is if you want to wait till hopefully they've gone elsewhere and they're rather than giving them shelter right by a food source.
Yeah. There we go, Sue. Thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck with that.
Linda in Oshkosh, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a compost pile that I was really proud of because I thought I was doing everything right. I took the old compost and layered it with shredded leaves and composted sheep manure, and I was taking its temperature hoping it would really heat up for me, but it hasn't. I'm thinking maybe that sheep manure was too composted. And my question is there anything I can add to that compost pile now to get it really working, something that I can inoculate it with or something?
Yes, you know, and that's, and you bring up a really good point. These things will break down eventually given time, but it sounds like you really want to speed up the process and get that heat going so things happen faster for you. If you don't mind using fertilizer or getting a hold of some manure that may be fresher, I have a compost aerator that's just, you know, you stick it down, it's got a little flange on the bottom and pull it up to let oxygen in the middle. But even using that or a pipe or something to help get some fertilizer vertically through the pile to kind of spread it through since the pile's already been made. The other thing, it should be moist but not soggy wet. So you want to make sure that it's damp but not soggy. Too wet, it's going to get smelly and it's going to decompose anaerobically, so it's going to not go so fast. If it's too dry, you're not going to get that activity as well. Covering it with clear plastic to take advantage of some heat from the outside can also help as well. And especially if we get all this, you know, some of the rain that's being predicted, that can also help keep it moist but not overly wet. And also with this wind, it can keep all your stuff in place if you don't have a bin around it as well. So you might want to try those couple of things, a little fertilizer, check the moisture, and some clear plastic.
Here we go, Linda. Thank you for calling. And Cheryl in Verona, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very large asparagus bed that's about 3 years old now, and I haven't really harvested out of it. It's still green and still has red berries. Should I be cutting that back or waiting till it all falls over? What's the best way to get it ready for winter?
Great question. Glad you asked. Leaving the asparagus stand even after it turns yellow and brown, those stems help capture the snow, so it makes for good insulation. Again, I consider that attractive winter interest. I know not everybody shares my view.
I like it, too.
But I think of that as nice things to come in the spring. So you want to wait? You want to wait at least till it totally browns and yellows and browns out. Otherwise, just clean up in the spring. One of the things, Larry, I don't know about you, I try to do some cleanup of diseased and insect-infested things, and I could hear you say you like to leave things stand for winter. What I find is come March or April, when the snow's starting to melt and we have one of those really nice days, and what are you going to do in the garden? Clean up. For me, that's the time I go out, I clean up, right?
Yep.
We're anxious to get out there. Right now, we're trying to frantically clean up and pack things away for winter. So in the spring, you know, late winter, early spring, we can get out. We can do some cleanup, start some composting, see what animal damage is out there. You know, I think it's a great time. It's when we're ready to get out in the garden again. And so it does a couple things. You're improving the plant health by leaving them stand. You're extending the time you can get work done and adding to the enjoyment, I think, as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, Cheryl, for calling. And Marcus in Mayfair, it is your turn. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I was wondering, what's the best way to winterize a red Japanese maple?
Is it in the ground?
Yes, it's close to the front of the house, but not real close.
Okay, well, one of the things that some of the research has found, that part of the problem is the winter thaws that we often get, you know, so it's not necessarily the extreme cold, but when we get a thaw and then it gets cold again, that we see some of the frost cracking. Winterization starts in the summer with any plant, you know, proper watering, good care, you know, making sure that soil is moist, you know, in case, you know, it's been such a crazy fall. Making sure that it's received sufficient moisture, making sure the ground is mulched, shredded bark or wood chips, not piled around the trunk, but around the base, you know, underneath the canopy of that tree. Those are probably about the best things you can do. Avoid high nitrogen fertilizers that promote less succulent growth that's more subject to disease, insect problems, and winter damage. Obviously, you're not fertilizing now, but, you know, something to keep in mind in the future. I find that and then if it's in a sheltered location, whether you create that yourself, giving it a little break from the wind or shade from the winds that might, or the winter sun that can warm up the bark on the south side of the plant, a little shade if that's an issue so that trunk doesn't get frost cracking or sun scald over winter is also a good thing to do. So that could just be, you know, after Christmas sometimes I'll collect trees from the neighborhood I used to when I was in the city, or take mine out. Use it as a windbreak. It's good shelter for the birds. It can be a windbreak for broadleaf evergreens or plants like this that would benefit from a little winter shade or protection from the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good way to get a second use out of your tree.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have, you know, we were talking about maples, tar spot last week on the show. I think every maple in my neighborhood, 3 miles at least of sidewalk walking, have tar spot.
You know, and you're noticing it now, if you haven't before, as you're raking all those leaves and those maples are finishing dropping their leaves. I agree. I first saw tar spot 20 years ago when I was teaching in Mequon, and it seemed to be, you know, only along the lake. And like you said, now it seems to be ever-present.
Well, at least it's not going to kill our trees.
Exactly, and just kind of living with it is probably the best bet.
Yep, absolutely. Annie in St. Peter, Minnesota, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm traveling in Wisconsin because I visit my granddaughter every couple of weeks.
Excellent.
My question is about a mock orange blossom bushes.
Okay.
And I have goats, and they kind of cleaned out the bottom of them a little over a year ago. When they got loose, and they filled out again through the bottom. But they just keep getting taller and taller no matter, you know, I've pruned them. Somebody told me I should cut them all the way down to, like, 6 inches from the ground. I can't see out of my screen porch because of them now, and I want them short again.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, okay, so here's one thing. The plants will tolerate severe pruning. The problem is, all that energy is stored in the roots. So you cut it back to 6 inches, and all that stored energy is going to push out new growth. I've seen forsythias that were like 6 feet tall, pruned to the ground. The next year, they were 12 feet tall. So then you have to come back and exactly. So you would be calling me again, and it wouldn't be a happy conversation. So here's what I'd recommend, Annie. And keep in mind that mock orange bloom on, they've already set their buds for next year, so whatever you're pruning out is eliminating some flowers, which it may not be an issue for you, so you can see out your screen porch. What I like to do in these cases is take a third of the older stems back to the ground, the bigger, fatter ones, and then reduce the height by a third. And you might want to do this right after flowering if you want to enjoy the blooms, but I know that's getting, you know, into the, you know, like late May, early June. But if you don't mind, or you can do it in the winter, it won't hurt the plant. You'll just eliminate or reduce your flowering. But if you take a third of the older stems, just a couple old ones to the ground, and reduce the height by a third, the next year do the same thing. By the third year, you'll have greatly reduced the size of the plant, and then you can just keep after it over time. I know that's like three more years, but you'll slowly get the height of that plant down without pushing out new growth that's going to need severe pruning, and then every year you're fighting against a big plant trying to keep it small. There are some dwarf cultivars out, some that were bred in Minnesota, actually, that have good flower bud hardiness, and like the dwarf snowflake. And so if you ever decide that you want to keep a mock orange but a smaller one, you might want to replace it with one of the dwarf or more compact varieties.
Okay, they are beautiful blooms when they're blooming.
And they smell so good, don't they?
They sure do.
Good luck with whatever you decide to do, Annie.
Thanks, Annie, for calling. And Brooke in Eau Claire, hello to you. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Yes, hi. It was given as a gift to me 2 years ago, a Mantavia, I think it's pronounced.
Oh, Mantavia, maybe?
With the red blossoms.
Yeah, they look kind of like petunias, only waxy leaves, the flowers.
Well, they're not waxy, but they're red, and they do look like petunias.
Okay.
It's Mantavia, something like that anyway.
Right.
But
Mantavia,
I had it outside this summer, and it just, when it was warm, it just bloomed like crazy, and I moved it into a very well-lit porch. It's heated, but it's not real hot, and it's got there's like 75 blossoms on there.
Excellent.
It's just gorgeous. But
oh, man.
I want to know, how do I treat it when it's done blooming? Do I fertilize it then? And
great question. And if you don't mind, Brooke, I'm going to talk about a couple of ways, including how you can overwinter your Mantavia. Mantavias, you can bring them in and grow them like a houseplant. They need good bright light. And as long as your porch stays above freezing, more like in the 40s, your plant should be fine. Okay, some people bring them in the house and find a good sunny window. Now, you want it, they're drought tolerant, but you can't let them go too dry. So you need to find that good light spot, and then water is needed, and keep it like a house plant. Last year, I took mine, my basement has no windows in this house, and I have a cold area where I store my wine, my dahlia bulbs, and my dahlia tubercers, and my mandevillas, and I just let mine go dormant. And then I brought them up in the spring, and they took off, and I had great flowering. So during the winter, unless you're getting a lot of new growth, you don't want to fertilize. If you're seeing a lot of new growth, you know, because they're in a spot where they're getting plenty of light, very dilute solution of houseplant fertilizer. Otherwise, we wait till more like March when the days are longer, temperatures start getting warmer, the plants usually put on more growth. So when you're getting a lot of active growth, that's a good time to do your fertilizing, because during winter, we're just trying to get them through. So depending on how the conditions are on your porch and the plants are responding, you may want to hold off on fertilizing until the spring.
There we go.
50 out. It's 50 degrees out there usually.
Oh. Okay, then that's perfect.
That's perfect.
Okay,
perfect.
Now I've had it in the same big, like a 5-gallon pot for 2 years. Is it okay to keep that
keep
same soil?
You bet. I would leave it in there, and if it seems in the spring, what you can do, maybe with the help of a friend, is carefully slide it out of the pot. And if it's pot bound, you know, where the roots are growing in a circle and there's nothing but roots, you might want to loosen those and put it in a slightly larger pot, or do root pruning where you remove like the outer inch of roots around and then put it back in the same container. Just thinking size and weight might make it easier to do that. And then fill those voids with fresh potting mix. But mandevillas, I've had one that stayed in the same pot for a good 2 or 3 years. So it's kind of letting the plant be your guide. So don't transplant it now. Wait until spring, and then check the roots and see if you really need to move it or not.
There you go, Brooke. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had Mark in Sheboygan said, I planted kale 2 years ago. I cut it down last winter, and it came back.
Right.
I haven't cut it this year. Will it still come back if I don't cut it?
It might. It wasn't a matter of the cutting. It was a matter of the winter survival. So pat yourself on the back, Mark. You always have bragging rights on getting it for 2 years. So you may have success with it coming back, too. So it's. I think that's part of the fun of gardening, is pushing the limits. And we don't
sure.
talk about kale being perennial here because of our cold but milder climates it is. So I think I'd give it a shot and see what you have. Worst case, you buy a new plant next year.
Yep, absolutely. Melinda Meyer is our guest today as we talk about your garden. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And speaking of Facebook, we had a comment from Mike, and this goes back to the question about the person who was trying to cut her iris down. Mike uses a razor knife, hold the foliage at the top and slice.
Ooh, like a box cutter kind of thing?
Yeah, I think he's talking about a box cutter, but he says, be a little careful and use good gloves and go slow. I think that's very good advice. Go slow. And here's an email question from Dar. I planted a container Japanese maple this spring. I'm not happy where I placed it. I read that I should not transplant until it goes dormant after a hard freeze or two. So I plan on doing so soon. Do you agree with this?
I would wait till spring. So it's
yeah,
it's in a container, or he planted it from a container and then doesn't like the location. Sorry,
I planted a
a container grown plant.
Yeah, I think that's what he meant.
Okay, I would wait till spring. Yeah, you can transplant things in fall after the leaves drop and there's still a lot of root development. But fruit trees, things that are slow to root, or, you know, and I'm thinking Japanese maple that have a hard enough time getting through our winter, I'd rather do it in spring just to have everything going in my favor.
Yep, I would definitely agree. Heidi in Campbellsport has a question for you. Let's go to her. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling. And what's on your mind?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I looked at my, I have a little garden that has irises in it, the bigger trumpet lilies, and then in the front row, I always put annuals. And the irises were way overgrown, and I know it keeps saying to to do it after they bloom. But by the time they're done blooming, everything else is up, so I don't want to be tramping around in there. So 2 weeks ago when it was really nice out, I went ahead, dug the whole thing up, and replanted and thinned everything out. What are the chances that those irises are going to make it doing it that late in the year?
You know, one of the things that I always tell people, I'm stress testing so I can tell you how it goes, as opposed to the procrastinator I am sometimes. So I've definitely pushed the limits. What I would do, though, is definitely after the ground freezes, because iris are just below the soil surface, I would take some evergreen boughs or straw after the ground freezes and cover the plants just to give them a little added insulation. That's always a good idea on perennials that maybe get moved later in the season than we'd like, or iris that get transplanted later just because they're so shallow. Bulbs that are subject to early sprouting or frost heaving. Winter mulch we apply when the ground's frozen so it stays cold, because what happens is when the soil freezes, then thaws and freezes and thaws, it shifts, and it actually can push some plants out of the ground. Coral bells are a great example. If you go out in the late winter, you know, after the snow's receded, right, and you can see them pushed out of the ground, sometimes you'll find the bulbs up on the soil surface, and iris especially being so shallow. So I think you have a good shot for them surviving, especially if we get good snow cover. But once the ground freezes, give them a little winter mulch, and I think that will help.
Thanks, Heidi. Appreciate the call. Linda in Lake Zurich, Illinois, we are on to you now. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a plant called, I think it's angel bells or angel trumpet. It's a beautiful plant, but I had one a couple years ago, and I brought it into the garage after the season, and then it just completely died out. I didn't know whether I should have kept watering it.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's a Brugmansia. Some are called Datura. Very toxic seeds. It has a long trumpet-shaped flower.
Yes.
Some of them, okay. And there's one type that's an annual. It has the fuzzy leaves, white flowers, sometimes reseeds from who knows where those seeds end up in your landscape. And they'll start from seeds each year. The Brugmansias, they've kind of divided and clumped this group. But the ones with the droopy flowers that are more colorful can be brought indoors and carried on like a flower, so a house plant. So good bright sunlight, watering, keeping it moist. You could also keep it somewhat dormant. It's a little trickier, but you'll want to water whenever that soil gets too dry. So if it's in a place where it's cool and dark, you want to make sure that it gets just enough water so it doesn't totally dry out and the roots don't desiccate.
Okay, and does it have to be in a certain temperature, even though it's dormant?
Yeah, you need to keep it above freezing if you want to keep it alive, preferably in the 40s and low 50s.
Okay.
You need to make friends with the woman in Wisconsin with that great porch. I have a few things I'd like to take there, too.
Yeah, that's a...
30-degree sunlight with our Mandavia, your Brugmansia would love it, too. So,
great.
Yeah, so good luck with that. It's a lot of fun. You know, bringing plants indoors is always challenging, and part of it is just figuring out where in your house it works and with the way you like to garden and manage your plants. So, you know, you may lose plants a couple of times, but once you find the right combination, boy, then it's good. It's a lot easier as you move forward.
Melinda Myers, our guest today, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. I love having her on the show, and I know you love listening to her. You go to melindamyers.com. That's her website. We've got lots of things there. And we have links on our Facebook page to all of her work. So I hope you'll go to the Larry Mueller Show. You just click on all the many things that she's got going for you and for me. And great to have her for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based garden expert. Always great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Dennis in Rock City, Illinois, next. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi, Dennis.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Our village in Rock City has a place where the villagers can take their grass clippings and or leaves if they want to compost.
Yes.
And I've heard, and you mentioned that anaerobic compost, I've been told that you shouldn't use it because this is black, it doesn't get turned, but I use it and put it in my garden, and I have two concerns. Number one, my strawberries grew well, but my amaranthias won't grow. And that's the weed and feed that some people use, maybe, is weeding my amaranthias, or is it just because it was too black and anaerobic?
Okay, good questions about municipal composting. Basically, with anaerobic composting, it just takes longer, it smells, and it tends to be wet and soggy, but you still end up with a composted product. Chances are, and when compost is done with grass clippings and leaves, you usually have a nice, dark, rich compost. Minnesota, years ago, the University of Minnesota did some research trying to answer just the question of how long do grass clippings treated, you know, from a lawn treated with a weed killer, how long are they effective in the compost pile? In general, once it's totally decomposed, the feeling is that they were not finding trace elements of herbicides. If weed killers were the problem, your strawberries would go before your amelanchier. Now, amelanchiers are slow-growing plant trees and shrubs. So the first couple years you put them in the ground, it seems like they sit there and do nothing. And that, I think that's what the plant was that you mentioned, was an amelanchier. And
yeah,
then after
blueberries.
Oh, and blueberries? Or the ones with the blueberries you can eat that taste so good. Yeah. In the first couple years, they sit there and do nothing, and then they just seem to take off. So that might be part of the problem, is just they're in that establishment phase. The other thing is, this house I moved into, there's an amelanchier by my front, and the cedar waxwings love the fruit. But as I was working in the bed where it was planted, I found that there was still twine around the base of the tree.
Oh.
There was, yeah. And so I found a few other plants on this property that have girdling roots and wire baskets intact. And so,
I know.
So I guess re-landscaping is in my future. But one of the things you might want to check, Dennis, is just if you didn't plant that, just carefully, don't dig too deep, but carefully pull back the soil around the base of the plant and make sure there isn't any twine or burlap intact. And if any burlap is exposed above ground, cut that away. Don't dig up the plant, but remove any, because burlap acts as a wick. So if the soil's moist, it'll travel up the burlap, and then it'll evaporate from that exposed from the air. So just make sure there's nothing else interfering with the growth of the amelanchier. So it sounds like you're not having any problems with the quality of the compost if your strawberries would have gone before your amelanchier. So I think it's probably something more related to either growing conditions or the age of that amelanchier. Listeners may know it as serviceberry. Great
yes.
fruit.
Yeah, wonderful fruit. Thank you, Dennis, for calling. Leah in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Melinda. Larry, I love Garden Talk. Love your show. And Melinda, I could listen to you talk for hours and hours.
Thank you.
Well, my comment is, I noticed about 3 weeks ago my white lilac bush started blooming. But it didn't open real full, but those clusters of buds had opened and some of the flowers opened.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe and about like 8 different clusters, so I assume that's going to be 8 less flowers I'll have in spring.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And I'm glad you brought this up with the crazy fall weather we've had. You know, we had a good hard freeze and then some mild weather. It's just been crazy. We often see forsythia. Sometimes crab apples will open up a few blooms. I was in downtown Milwaukee one time where there was a calorie pear in full bloom.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I went back because it was fine the next year, but you're right. There were no blossoms on that tree that spring. So you're absolutely right, Leah. Sometimes when we have a droughty summer, a period of drought in the summer, or we have a cold snap followed by a warm snap, it'll trick the plants into flowering because they've already set their buds. Things that flower early in the spring set their buds in summer. So we'll often get that flush of blooms, hopefully just a couple, not the whole plant. So you're absolutely right. Enjoy that minuscule bloom display right now and know that it'll come back hopefully the following year, and you should still get some flowers with those unopened flower buds.
Thanks,
right,
Leah.
It wasn't all of them, but I would say it maybe about 8 clusters of them.
Oh, well, that's always, yeah.
8 fewer next year.
Exactly.
Thanks, Leah, for calling. Mary in Egg Harbor. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, you have a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Okay, toward the end of the season, I picked up an ever-blooming strawberry plant. And is that supposed to be an inside plant? It seemed like it was growing some little starters, and should it be put into the ground? And I don't know what to do with it now.
Yeah, exactly. Ever-blooming strawberries, our indoor conditions are a little tough for that. Usually don't have enough bright light. Our temperature's a little warm, so we don't have the light to match the warm temperatures. And so ever-blooming strawberries produce several crops of fruit throughout the year. So, you know, if your ground is still, I'm assuming your ground is still thawed up there, that you can get a shovel in.
Yes.
Or you could heal the plant in a sheltered area. If you plant it, or no, however you manage it, sink the pot in the ground or plant it, after the ground freezes, I would still mulch it. With ever-bearing strawberries, often we plant them, we'll often pick off the first flush of blooms so that the plant puts energy in the roots and then let those later crops develop. So I think you're going to have a much easier time either putting it in an unheated garage, sinking the pot in a vacant part of your garden, or planting it and mulching it, whether you plant it or heal it in, after the ground freezes, just for added insulation. That's a great way to take care of not only your ever-bearing strawberry, but perennials, trees and shrubs that you couldn't resist the sale price maybe, or you bought too many, that's my disease, and you didn't get them in the ground. And so digging a trench, healing in so the pots are buried is one way. Probably the best for the plants, easy from a standpoint from once you're done until you dig them up in spring. I've also grouped mine together, put all my pots together, buried them in wood chip mulch, or surrounded them with my annual pots of petunias and patience, things that are going to die, but I don't empty them in the compost, but use that to insulate the roots. You can also put them in an unheated garage. I would put them on a wood board or something to get them off the cold concrete, and then just put bags of potting mix or whatever stuff you have in the garage for added insulation. And then one of the keys is to water whenever the ground is thawed and dry. So indoors, if you remember when we had that warm March a couple years ago, a lot of people lost their containers in their unheated garage because it got warm. They started to grow. The soil was thawed. So just kind of monitor it, and water is needed. Or one gardener had an even better solution. She would be shoveling snow. As long as it didn't have de-icing salt, she'd throw a scoop on every plant in the garage, which I always think her neighbors were probably wondering what she was doing. There she goes again. And then the good part is when it gets warm, the snow melts and waters it. So it kind of eliminates the do I need to check on it kind of.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, isn't it? It's one of those dumb moments where I went, wow, I wish I would have thought of that.
There we go. Thanks, Mary. And Carrie in Milwaukee, thank you for calling.
Hi, it's Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
Are you there, Larry?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, this is Terry in Milwaukee.
Oh, Terry.
Hi, Mel.
Oh.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Terry?
I'm good. And you know I should know better, or you know that I've tried everything, but I cannot get my Hoya carnosa to bloom. I can't. I've tried for years.
And she's an expert gardener, horticulturist and gardener. And so that's, Terry, that shout out so for all those other people that are struggling. So, you know, they'll feel better knowing an expert like you. A couple things that seem to help with succulents. Summering them outdoors so they get good bright light to put the energy back in. Now, that always means the transition out and back in and the risk of bringing insects. Keeping them a little bit cooler in the winter. You know, if you have a room that tends to be bright and a little bit cooler, slightly drier. And then those, as you know, but others might not know, Terry, is that long stem that doesn't have leaves that forms at the bottom. That's what will eventually have blossoms if you're lucky. Watch your fertilizing. You know, during the growing season, you can use a flowering plant fertilizer a couple of times. They don't need a whole lot of nutrients running them a little sparse is a good idea. And you probably tried all of that. And if so, threatening death is also it might work. You're out of here if it doesn't work. So give that a try. Some of those things adjust if you need to. But thank you. Good to hear from you, Terry. I'm glad and hope all is well outside of that non-blooming Hoya.
Yes. Thanks so much, Mel. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Terry. Thanks for calling. Oh, boy. I wanted to go back to that DVD, that new set of DVDs that you have, How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everybody. And we've got a link on our Facebook page, but in 40 seconds, can you give a little thumbnail again?
You bet. It's all about how to start a garden from building the soil, because most of us don't have good soil to plant in, planting for maximum productivity, harvesting fruits, flowers, and vegetables, and making it pretty, whether it's in a container or in the garden. So just tips that I've learned along the way that I've used, and we get to show you how to do it, which I think is the power of a DVD.
And they get to see your new place, your new
business. You bet. And it's changed a lot. So I'm going to have to do some more videos from here just to show you that we did get the deer fence in eventually.
And did it work?
Well, we haven't had deer damage. We're still securing some areas from the ground squirrels, which are the 13-line ground squirrels, which are wreaking havoc in the garden. They get to eat. They're protected. They love it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Melinda Myers, our guest today. Melinda, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, author of more than 20 books, and has this set of DVDs as well, How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone. For Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based gardening expert. Wonderful to have her with us. Thank you for listening in. If you have a question or a comment, join in. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Ron in New Lisbon has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Ron, see what's on his mind. Hi, Ron.
Hello. I planted some Juneberries this spring, and I was wondering if I can cover them up yet. What I have is I have a few corn stalks, some pine needles, and I was hoping it'd be okay to put leaves on top of that if I'm a little short of what I need and how much I should put on it. But with this weird weather we've had, I thought they were supposed to be pretty much brown and dormant, and it hasn't happened yet. So is it still too early?
And you said June-bearing strawberries, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yes, I would wait. I'd wait to do your mulching if you're going to mulch the plants once the ground freezes. If they've been in the ground all summer, they're probably pretty well covering the soil at this point. I mean, you can mulch any exposed soil now is not a problem, but if you're going to do winter mulching, you want to wait till the ground gets crunchy and then cover them. So a lot of times our strawberries, depending on how the weather is, can hold their green leaves throughout the winter, but you want to make sure that when the ground freezes, then that's a good time to do your mulching.
And is our leaves okay? I mean, I'd have a layer of corn stalks and pine needles, but that probably only is going to be like an inch thick. Would it be okay to put a few leaves on top of that?
The only reason I'm not a fan of leaves is they just tend to mat down and ice up, and they're not airy enough. So if you shred them, that's going to increase your chance of success. Definitely don't put whole big leaves like from maples and oaks and things that tend to mat down, ice up. You can often find those when we have a late, winter that runs into a very cool spring. I found piles of leaves iced up even into the end of May. So they're not the best insulators. The other thing that I do, and I find works very well, is evergreen boughs. So from holiday trees, so yeah. Whether you have a live tree or neighbor, usually in our area, if you can get it down after Christmas, you're still getting it mulched in time for the spring freeze and thaw temperature.
Yeah.
The other thing that works really well is they've done some work with floating row covers, too, covering the plants, and that helps insulate to some degree, too. And those are the fabrics that let air, light, and water through but trap heat. So that gives it just a little bit of an insulation over winter as well. So, you know, I would go light with the leaves. If you give it a try, make some notes to see, you know, if there's an area that tends to die out. Was that where most of the leaves were and the corn stalks weren't elevating the leaves above it? You know, if you can weave your corn stalks in a way that the leaves stay above, then you're probably have a much better chance, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Ron. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Manitouish Waters. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question.
Bob.
All the sucks and all the gray squirrels in my yard are chewing all the bark off of all my small, like, 3- and 4-inch maple trees.
Oh.
I mean, from top to bottom, they're absolutely eating all the bark. It's just, I've lived there for 30 years, never seen them do it before.
And I don't know
what to do about it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's this, you know, extended warm period that they're looking for more food than normal, that they're more active than normal. It's a common problem where squirrels will rip off bark and eat the cambium. They'll often chew the tips of branches as well. And the hard thing is, if you're in a city situation, they're so used to people that scare tactics usually are not that effective.
No.
Clanging pans and that type of thing. There are some squirrel repellents that may or may not have success. It'd be worth a try. Make sure they're labeled for repelling squirrels, because most repellents don't work on squirrels. Physically wrapping your trees, I know that's very cumbersome and may not even be practical, but sometimes wrapping some burlap around or something to stop so they can't get to the bark so that they can't rip it off. Those are some of the things that might give you some help in trying to protect the tree. I'm just thinking, for some reason, either the population's higher than normal, food is a bit scarcer, or this crazy weather has their eating habits changing a bit, and that might be why they're attacking. Silver maples are a maple where the bark tends to peel, slough off with age, and so if your trees are at that point, they may be finding it easier to peel it back, too. If you know, you've got a tree with exfoliating bark where it's easier for them to get a hold of. So I think anything that can prevent them from getting to the bark, and I know scare tactics are tough because you have to go to work or go do other things, and they have all day to wait for you to leave to get the bark off
the
tree.
And I live in the middle of the woods. I've been hoping that eagle's nest on our property. And
And you want to point out and go, here. Get these guys. That's what I see at the hawks and the ground squirrels. I'm like, really? Come on, help me out here.
I tried hot sauce once.
Oh, okay.
And that worked really well. And that was actually for the squirrel was into the seeds, bird seeds. And the squirrel did not come back. The squirrel did not like biting into hot sauce.
That's a great idea. And there's a hot pepper wax spray for animals as well as insects. So if you can't master getting that hot sauce on the trunk of the tree and getting it to stick, thank you, Larry. You might want to try the hot pepper wax, which most garden centers carry. So it would have the same idea as Larry's hot sauce. It would just be a wax, so it might stick a little bit better.
It would stick better. And it's, I think once they bite into that, they're kind of reluctant to come back.
Well, you know, and that is the key. And if you're in the woods, they'll probably find another tree, unfortunately, but maybe not, you know, one
maybe
year.
Maybe not yours.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go,
Good
Bob.
Good luck with that, Bob.
Thanks a lot. Ron in La Crosse. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Hi, Ron.
Yeah. I have a question regarding a rose bush I purchased. Supposed to plant it in the fall.
Yeah.
And the name of it is Cardinal Colorscape, but that's not its scientific name. And it says, fall's the best time. And I've got a couple questions. When I dig the hole to plant it this fall, should I prepare the hole with anything? I have a rose bush that near the house on the south face of the house, so it gets full solar sun exposure. And that one succumbed to a hard winter. Can I remove that old dead rose bush and put this new one in, or should I plant the new rose bush in a different hole?
Well, if your rose bush died because it wasn't hardy and it went from the winter and it wasn't a disease problem, then there's no problem. When we lose a plant to a disease problem, it's best not to put the same kind of plant or a related plant in that same spot. So if it was just winter killed because maybe it was a hybrid tea, you know, it wasn't because of any of the growing conditions, just our cold winter, there shouldn't be a problem. Fertilizing, a lot of research has shown you want to get the plant in and get it rooted before you do fertilizing. If you are going to fertilize it, planting this time of year is a low nitrogen, slow release fertilizer. Otherwise, wait until spring once growth begins, and then you can use a fertilizer as well. So yes, you can plant this time of year once the, you know, mulch the soil with wood chips or shredded bark or some kind of organic mulch, keep it away from the base, and make sure it's well watered until the ground freezes, and then next spring just kind of check for any animal damage, you know, prune out any dead growth, minimal pruning, because the more stems and leaves, the more energy going back in to get the roots established, and then that's a good time that you can do a fertilization in the spring once growth begins.
I wouldn't wait around any longer to plant that.
Good point. I know. I have a few things I'm trying to decide. Am I going to plant them or heal them in? And it's supposed to rain next week for a lot of us. So, yeah, I think I would heed Larry's advice. Get it in the ground maybe this afternoon or tomorrow.
Thanks, Rod, for calling. Appreciate it. And Randy in Spring Green, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Say, I've got some potted strawberries in little strawberry pots, and they did really well. I had my last strawberry about 3 weeks ago. How would I put that away for the winter so that I will be able to bloom them again next year?
You bet. Is it a clay strawberry pot?
Yeah, clay pot, yep.
Okay. Now, I've had some luck moving it into my unheated garage. The problem is when the soil freezes in a container, it expands and can crack your pot. So
that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah. So a couple things you might want to do. If you put it in an unheated garage, maybe in a box and surround it with the evil kind of packing peanuts, the ones that don't degrade because you don't want them degrading and creating this mucky mess, or something that would provide some insulation to at least reduce the risk.
I wonder if shredded leaves.
Yeah, they'll be dry, so that'll be great because it's inside. That would be a great insulator. It's just when they get wet, they don't insulate well. If you really like that pot and that means more to you than the strawberries, then I would empty the pot and either heal the strawberries in. If you are like, I'm going to take a chance, then I would put it in an unheated garage and insulate it with something and take your chances. Anytime, it's just risky because if that pot expands, it can crack it, or the soil expands, it can crack your pot.
Speaking of that, I had that issue last winter. I had a couple of pots outside, and I left them too long, and then someone said, well, turn them upside down at least.
Yeah.
I turned them upside down, and they cracked a little, but you know what? I was still able to use them this year.
Well, and I think all of us gardeners, it adds character, right, Larry?
Yes.
And last year was crazy because we had that cold snap early, and it caught a lot of us by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like this weekend I've got some good weather, so I thought maybe I'd try and...
Yeah.
But it's not too late to heal them in, you said?
No, I'm healing in a lot of stuff right now this weekend. This is going to be my plant it or heal it in. So as long as you can dig a trench, pop the plants in so that the roots are covered, whether they're in a container and you're sinking the pot in the ground, or if they're bare root, you know, if you're taking it out of that clay pot, you know, it's going to be tricky because they're probably well-rooted in there, but if you can get the roots in there and get the roots covered, and then when the ground freezes, I would mulch those just because of the transition from the pot to the ground this late in the season.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Fran and Nina, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I have a question for you on the lemon tree. I hear you talking about limey all the time, and I'm so jealous. This tree came home from Florida many years ago in a styrofoam cup, and now it's growing in a big pot on our enclosed, very sunny south-facing porch. And it has gotten two nice lemons on it, and it gets buds and blossoms every once in a while, but they just sort of fall off, and probably a third of the leaves have fallen off. I'm wondering what I can do to save this tree and make it more healthy.
Well, I'm going to first, Larry, do you have any advice you want to share as the successful grower of limey?
I've got to tell the story first. At about 3 o'clock this morning, I got up to go to the bathroom, to be perfectly honest, and it's sort of completely dark. And what do I step on but one of a lime that had fallen off of limey?
Oh.
So it was just a glancing blow, but I knew immediately what it was. Oh, boy. I have grow lights on limey in the wintertime.
And I think that's key.
Yeah, I have grow lights on limey, and they're the new kind, the low...
Energy?
The low energy one, but they're grow lights. They're the low energy grow lights.
Wide spectrum of wavelength lights.
Yeah, and so...
Okay, so that might be helpful. What about, do you feed it or anything?
I'm sorry?
Do you feed it with any kind of plant food or anything?
I'll feed it,
yeah. I use a fish oil or fish emulsion.
So like a low nitrogen.
Oh, very, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like
okay.
A tablespoon of that, you throw it in the water that you're going to water it.
And so I can get this fish emulsion at some place where they grow, where they sell plants and pots and things like that.
Yeah, you'll get it. And the time to do it is put it in and then leave the house for a while.
Oh, okay.
And if you have cats. Do your cats dig in the pot?
They don't in mine because I put aluminum foil.
Okay.
I crunch up aluminum foil and put it on the soil.
Okay, well, this plant is not, you know, it's on this enclosed south-facing porch, which doesn't get below maybe 40 or 50 all winter, and we can shut the door between the porch and our house, and we'll probably be okay.
So I think the key things are the things that make blossoms drop off of fruiting and flowering plants, fluctuating temperatures, so extremes of heat and cold, you know, fluctuating, not gradual changes, moisture issues. So if you allow the soil to get too dry because you're on vacation or you forget, that can cause the blossoms to drop or the small and mature fruit to drop, drafts of hot or cold air.
Okay.
And I figured you got to get the advice from the guy who's got such great success.
Yes,
Limey.
Yes, I'm so glad that Larry passed that along.
Exactly.
I'll look into the grow lights, too.
Yeah, grow lights are really, if you want to overwinter, I have some limes on a small lime plant. I had growing a lemon, a lime, two lemons and a lime growing outside, and I have fruit on one, and they're in an area in a bright window. And so I'm going to see if I'm successful, and I'm thinking lights are going to be in their future, too.
Okay, so. I'll call back in a year or so.
That's right. We'll come here, and Larry can advise us at that point.
Thanks, Brad. Yeah, Limey has, I didn't count. There's about a half a dozen limes or so yet.
Wow,
on.
Excellent.
But they're smaller. This one was full size for sure.
You'll have to go home and enjoy it tonight.
Well, I will. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what's going to happen. Deborah in Milwaukee, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the Hoya plant. I was just interrupted, and so I had to run out the door to get some peace here. But anyway, it's a 21-year-old son I have. So I read about, I looked at the Hoya, and it said, like in the summer, to give it like a liquid fertilizer and have it planted in like African violet soil, really light soil, and it likes to be actually root bound. And then it says in the winter to stop feeding it. And then there's these spurs that the flowers are born on, and don't cut those off. It says to leave those on because the new flowers will come out on those. And
right,
so
that was
maybe
the long leafless. That's right, that was the long leafless stem I mentioned. So spur is another word for that, right?
Yeah,
exactly. So thank you, Deborah, for double checking my advice.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we had, we've had lots of email questions as well. Roberta in Ashford had this question: any recommendations for dwarf apple trees for novices? I'm hoping to plant some fruit trees next year by my garden. What do you think?
Well, here's a couple things. The urban apple trees are columnar apple trees that are about 2 to 3 feet wide and 8 feet tall. They're very narrow and upright. There are about 4 different varieties available. You do need 2 plants for cross-pollination, so for pollination and fruit to form. But what's cool about those is they are supposed to, I haven't grown them myself, so I'm going by the advertisement and talking to people who have grown them. They're supposed to start bearing fruit in just 1 or 2 years. And the nice part is it's a small tree, so
yeah.
It makes it very easy and very narrow and upright. So good for a pot, a container, if you can overwinter that container or next to a patio or balcony. I always, when people are looking for fruit advice, go to UW Extension. They have, apple tree cultivars for southern, fruit cultivars for southern Wisconsin, fruit cultivars for northern Wisconsin. And then the dwarfing portion is the rootstock the plant's on. So you could get a Red Delicious, but if it's on a dwarfing rootstock, that makes it a smaller plant. So two things you want to look for. Go to the Extension publication, and they've got not only what will grow here, but a description. Is it good for pies? Is it good for fresh? You know, and some of it's the flavor you prefer, and then looking for the dwarf rootstock when you're buying it. So if you're purchasing and they don't mention that it's dwarf or semi-dwarf, then you're probably going to get a big tree, a standard-sized tree.
Bruce in Maribel sent us a note and said, Melinda mentioned earlier about using pine needles as a winter mulch. I have easy access to cedar droppings. Would that work as well?
Okay, and pine and evergreen boughs are the better mulch, meaning the whole branches, because it's airier. So I'm sorry, Brian, if I misspoke. You could do that with any of the evergreens because they're light and airy. So what they're doing is trapping air between the soil and the top, you know, and the outside air. So any of those pine needles, spruce needles, those make great soil mulches. And you could do the same with your cedar, too, the needle portion, you know, their scales and odds. But the branches are what make the good winter mulch. So if I misspoke, thank you for catching me, Brian.
There we go. We have an email from Michael in Middleton wondering about a variegated holly bush. How easy or hard is it to be transplanted?
Boy, if you've got it in a spot it's happy, I would leave it there. Hollies kind of struggle. They like acidic soil. They're, you know, broadleaf evergreen, so that means they struggle from our winter winds, and the winter sun can be very drying and desiccated. So you want to get them in an east-facing or a very sheltered location. The bigger the plant, the bigger the root ball, the heavier it's going to be and the harder to move. So if it's a young plant, you have a good shot. I would wait. I would do it in the spring, you know, just because it's a broadleaf evergreen that's going to struggle through the winter. You know, I would wait until, you know, before growth begins and try to move it then if you really have to move it.
Very good. Very good advice, I think. And Melinda, how are your books doing?
They're doing great. It's always fun. I'm going to be at the Bloomin' Holidays event in West Bend at the Art Museum up there, so I'll have my books on hand. Midwest has been flying off the shelf. I've been lucky enough to travel a lot throughout the Midwest and take my books with me. And small space gardening, so many people are looking at either they have a small yard and want to pack a lot in, or maybe a big yard. This is my challenge now that I'm trying to create those small spaces, those cozy spaces within this big property, just because that intimacy in a garden is so powerful. So in the best part of my books is I get to talk to gardeners when I go out and do book signings or give talks. I get to meet a lot of your listeners, and it's always a good time.
Well, and we have a link, but it's melindamyers.com. That's your website. And we have a link to that and a link to your DVD, How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone. So it's all good, Melinda, and thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, and always fun, and we'll compare citrus growing tips in a year, and I'll either confess failure or success.
All right, there we go. Melinda Myers, our guest, Milwaukee-based garden expert. Again, go to melindamyers.com if you'd like to take a look and see the books and the DVDs that she's got going. She always has a lot going on. Again, we'll take a look at on Monday at different treatments for different types of tendonitis and how to deal with that issue. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.